Well, I think it was a day of betrayal, and I think that the Australian people are more than capable of understanding that they've been dudded without necessarily needing my presence. But this is a long-arranged trip to London to attend the International Democratic Union, which is a meeting of the leaders of centre-right parties from around the world. And of course, the government late last week decided with the Greens that it was going to cut short Senate debate and ram the carbon tax through through yesterday.
They have the numbers to do so. That is their prerogative in a parliament.
Look, I think something as important as this, which wasn't taken to the people at an election as it should have been subjected to proper parliamentary scrutiny. It's interesting that both in the lower house and in the Senate, the government allowed second reading speeches to go on for some days, but the really important detailed scrutiny in the committee stage of the debate, where you go through the legislation line by line, was gagged. Now, there's some 19 bills, over 1,000 pages of legislation, all sorts of complex clauses there. Why shouldn't the Parliament have been able to go through it line by line? Surely it would have been better and more democratic if all of the implications of all of the different provisions had been properly debated.
On the topic of supporting a carbon tax, when in the UK, I'm sure you'll meet with UK Conservative leader and the Prime Minister of Britain, David Cameron, who's on record as saying we need a price on carbon. Will you be taking your concerns with him?
Well, look, I think there have been mixed messages from the British government in recent times. The Chancellor of the Exchequer said just the other day that you couldn't save the planet by closing down British industry, and this is one of the very important consequences of raising the price of production in countries with a carbon tax. If the whole world isn't doing it, you're just putting your own economy at a serious disadvantage.
No one is suggesting that this carbon tax is going to close down Australian industry, are they?
I'm not so sure about that. If the Chinese adopted the same approach to coal, for instance, that we are proposing here in Australia, that would certainly do enormous damage to Australia's export coal industry. Under the government's own figures, absent carbon capture and storage, or clean coal technology as it's sometimes called, our use of coal for domestic power will drop from about 80% now to just 10% in 40 years' time. Now, as I said, if the Chinese did the same thing there as we are proposing here, that would be diabolical for the future of coal.
Do you accept, Mr. Abbott, now that this is law in Australia, there is, if this legislation was allowed to stand and continue, there's a model, there is certainty, businesses can get on with acting under that new regime. Your blood oath to withdraw this legislation, if you become Prime Minister, and it's unclear as to what can be withdrawn, what can't, how you would do it, etc., only creates more business uncertainty. And surely the worst thing for business now in this environment is not knowing what the law might be 3 years from now.
Adam, the best certainty I can give is the certainty of no added cost to consumers, of no added costs on production.
Do you accept the government's modelling that suggests that for the vast bulk of Australian families there won't be a cost? The compensation package will be in excess of the costs that will be passed on.
Adam, even on the government's own modelling, at least 3 million Australian households will be worse off, and I don't believe you can trust the government's modelling, because the government's modelling assumes that the rest of the world adopts carbon taxes. Well, the rest of the world isn't adopting carbon taxes. The Canadians aren't. The Americans aren't, the Indians aren't, the Chinese aren't, and modelling put out by the Minerals Council just a couple of days ago suggests that the carbon tax in 2020 won't be $29 a tonne, as the government suggests, but it's much more likely to be $43 a tonne. Obviously, that means prices will be commensurately higher.
Front page of today's Australian newspaper, a headline you might not yet have seen, Opposition Anger at Leaders' Policy Consultation. Tony Abbott faces criticism from within his own party for not seeking front bench approval for a new anti-dumping policy attacked by Labor as out of step with World Trade Organization rules. Are these valid concerns?
Well, it's interesting. The Labor Party admitted just a few months ago that the anti-dumping proposals that we put forward the other day were entirely consistent with the World Trade Organization. Now, these proposals have gone through the coalition's ordinary policy-making process, and I'm very proud of them, and they're yet another sign that we are constantly coming up with positive ways to build a stronger economy and ultimately a stronger and better country.
Because one of the quotes in this article describes the Labor Party as trying to paint you as stuck in a constant cycle of negativity. You've heard these criticisms that anything this government proposes at the moment, your position is just no, 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 no. What do you say to those concerns about your style of proposing an alternative government for this country?
Well, look, I think that the most positive thing I can do for Australia right now is save our country from a carbon tax. And I say no to a carbon tax because I say yes to affordable power prices, and I say yes to the additional investment and the additional jobs that we'll get if we don't inflict this economic own goal upon ourselves.
Mr. Abbott, do you accept that there are many economists who analyse your party's response to the carbon tax, your alternative direct action plan, and say that it's not economically balanced and it won't environmentally achieve the objectives you claim it will?
Well, I accept that there's criticism from time to time, but there's also enormous criticism of the government's policy. The other point I really should make, Adam, is that if you look at the government's own figures, Australia's domestic emissions don't reduce by 5%. They actually increase by about 8%. Now, this is where Greg Combe was misleading the Australian people the other night on the 7:30 report, where he said with a straight face that under the carbon tax, Australia's domestic emissions reduce. They don't. On the government's own figures, they go up by 8% between now and 2020.
Do you accept that Australia needs to cut its emissions, Mr. Abbott?
I think Australia should cut its emissions. I think we.
When Barnaby Joyce describes carbon dioxide as a colourless, odourless gas, and in doing so is clearly playing to people who believe that the theories of man-made human global warming, of carbon dioxide being a dangerous pollutant, he's clearly playing to people who think that is bunk. Are you going to call him back in line to that? He's pandering to climate sceptics. Well, have we moved beyond that, or is there still a place for climate scepticism in this debate?
Adam, look, we should try to reduce our carbon dioxide emissions, and the Coalition is committed to reducing domestic emissions by 5% by 2020.
Why should we do that? Why should we do that?
Because we've only got one planet. We want to pass it on to our children and grandchildren in better condition than we found it. And if we can rest as lightly as possible on the planet, that's all to the good. So we should try to reduce our emissions. But I should also make the point that carbon dioxide is not a dangerous pollutant of itself. Of itself, it is a trace gas which is necessary for life. Now, we don't want too much of it. We don't want mankind adding to it where we can avoid it. We should, here in Australia, try to reduce our emissions by 5%. I believe that can be done under the Coalition's direct action policy, but plainly it won't be done under the government's tax policy, because the government's own figures show that our domestic emissions go up by 8%, not down by 5%, under a carbon tax by 2020.
You've gone on a journey on this. You've been derided in the past for having said climate change science is crap, and you've clearly moved on to embrace a position now that seems more in keeping with the mainstream science on that from what you've just said. But you know it's your side of politics is attacking the government's policy on many fronts. There are quibbles about the way the tax will work, the business implications, but there's also a significant part of your side of politics who are running the climate sceptic line. And I think you know how people argue that that is very damaging to the overall suite of policies that are looking towards the benefit of the planet. So why don't you call like someone like Barnaby Joyce into line? When you're on another radio station where people run climate sceptic lines, why don't you call them into line and say that you disagree?
Well, Adam, just to make it crystal clear, I think that climate change is real. Mankind does make a contribution, and we should have strong and effective policies to deal with it. As far as I'm concerned, the debate is not over climate change as such. The debate is over the best way of dealing with it. Now, I think the best way of dealing with it is to take direct action to cut emissions, not to make everyone's cost of living more expensive, and to impact on Australian jobs and Australian industry's competitiveness. So that's the argument. How do you best deal with climate change? And I think incentives are better than penalties.
Do you think that the government structure of taking large amounts of this money and creating a renewable energy fund, investing in certain technologies, skilling in certain jobs, puts us in a position where not just in Australia, but in the exploding Asian region, in a few years from now, we can be far more competitive than we are at the moment in industries that everyone predicts will grow significantly over time? If we are laying down now the foundations for Australian brilliance and ingenuity in wind power, in solar power, in geothermal, etc., surely that's visionary for our country.
Well, I think there's a significant place for solar power and wind power, and certainly we need to have significant research into all of these renewable energy sources. But we've also got to face the fact, Adam, that when the wind doesn't blow and the sun doesn't shine, the power doesn't flow. And you are always going to have alternative sources of power to wind and solar, because they just can't be relied upon.
Mr. Abbott, thank you very much for your time this morning.
I appreciate the chance to talk, Adam.